Hey, everybody. Welcome back to One Club Shorts podcast. We've got a lot going on as far as our world's concerned. We're at our third event that kind of is back to back to back. So we are off to Rock Rimmon Country Club in Stamford, Connecticut on Monday the 14th. It is going to be an absolute banger. The course is out of this world. The food is great. We have just a few spots left. We're basically sold out for the most part, and will be by tomorrow for sure. But it's one of those things that when we put out the schedule, this was one of the courses that immediately grabbed everybody's attention and started lining up to get their partners for. So it's going to be an awesome day. I think it's going to be like 84 degrees and you know, partly cloudy. So it's going to be, it's not going to be too hot. We've got some special guests coming, which we're super excited about. We've got the Busted Jack Boys coming to play with us in the event. They're shooting their Golf and Old Glory tour, and this Connecticut is on their stop, is on their next stop. So we are happy to have them. They're going to, you know, add a whole different element to the event itself and a whole different level of competition. And they seem like awesome guys. So more than anything else, I'm excited to meet them. And, you know, I'm sure all the other players that are there are going to be excited to meet them as well. So shout out to the Busted Jack Boys. We are looking forward to seeing you all. And then, you know, on the PGA side, you know, not a crazy exciting week, but some pretty big news that I think is going to rock either the FedEx Cup, you know, talk, it's going to lead into the huge Ryder Cup discussion and kind of what's really going on with golf as far as the turning point. You know, as LIV starts to potentially wind down, where do all these other players and you know, start to intertwine again with the PGA? And with that, some of these folks coming in, and we'll talk about Bryson in a second and Brooks, some of these guys are just starting to get hot again. I think if there is that merger back to the PGA, the timing couldn't be any better as far as like finishing up this season strong, you know, hitting next season with the ground on the ground running. And who knows what that'll actually look like. But I just think there's some interesting things to talk about in that sense, because it's gonna be a strange off season. But I think more than anything else, I think the Ryder Cup could really start to meld some of these two groups together. And, you know, Will, Glenn, I'm curious to see what you guys think about how that's going to look. You know, do these guys from LIV get the invite? Who do we think earns that spot? And then who from the PGA, JT, whoever, you know, gets on the outs, if any of them?
Yeah, so there's a lot to unpack there, but let's start with the thing that you've been alluding to, which is that Bryson shot 58 in the final round of LIV's event at the Greenbrier. And not surprisingly, I have a few issues with this. First, they had, what, six guys or five guys at minus 16 or better? They had a three-day tournament that was won at 23 under par. I think they finally did. This is actually not an issue I have with it. This is a place that I'm going to give LIV credit. I think they finally did what I said they need to be doing. I think they finally lied to us about the golf course. If you go on the LIV website, it says it was playing almost 7,200 yards. You're telling me that a bunch of guys averaged better than 65 for 3 days in a row on a 7,200 yard golf course? Maybe that's not freakishly long for, you know, professional golfers, but I'm a little skeptical. I think they're doing the right thing by finally lying to us. Second, though, Bryson shot 58. I had no idea it happened until this morning when I got suggested a YouTube video by Bryson about him doing it. So that's the state of LIV getting content out about what goes on in their events, that I only see it days later from one of their players while I'm trying to put together agenda items for a golf podcast. That's embarrassing. That is absolutely embarrassing. And look, I have a lot of issues with LIV. We know this, the format, all of it, but holy cow, if you cannot get it in front of my eyes, someone who's plugged into this stuff, that one of the I don't know, 50 best players on the planet just shot 58, you have failed. You have absolutely failed.
See, that's where I disagree. I feel like this has been all over social media. I mean, I don't think I've turned on Instagram, YouTube, or any of it without something of this coming up since the minute it happened. You know, whether
that makes one of us,
even SportsCenter, you know, everybody was posting this thing. So I feel like you may have been under a rock this weekend and just missed it because it was definitely out there. I mean, more live talk than I think we've had ever as far as like something spectacular happening, you know, that they're super excited about. I don't know, Glenn, you're closer to all of us than we are. Do you feel the same way or no?
Yeah, I saw it all over the place too. You know, even like the PGA Tour players like Rom tweeting out, you know, something along the lines of, I don't care where you're playing. It's a 658 on Sunday to win a tournament. You played some great golf. I think it's everywhere. You could talk about golf's version of the corked bat if they're making the course shorter, but it wasn't playing at 6,300 yards, maybe played at 68 or 69.
I hope that's what they were doing. It worked great for Sammy Sosa. It worked great for baseball. Like, they better be doing that.
Yeah, but every week on the PGA Tour, we see guys shooting, flirting with 59. It seems like almost every week. So I wouldn't blame the Greenbrier. I mean, the PGA Tour has been there for how many years before, you know, the whole live thing? They were there and no one shot 58. So, you know, hats off to Bryson DeChambeau, that was a great round.
Even that last putt, it was in the rain. It was like a downhill slider. Like, you know, I just feel like, you know, didn't matter where he was playing, he was shooting a really good score. I mean, maybe not a 58 to a certain, you know, degree on certain courses, but he was feeling it. And, you know, when you get that way, it's just, you know, we saw him do it at the Open. When he's on, he's really tough to beat. And then you can say that about any of the top 20 players, but, you know, it's good to see him back in the conversation. It's good to see Brooks back in the conversation. You know, I just, these are golfers that we're better off as a sport when they're playing well.
Yeah, I think so obviously, but he was just going, he was looking to two putt for a 59 and it went in a little serendipitous, but it was a heck of a putt. But even look, I know both of the events had rain on Sunday and there were more people ringing the 18th green, the Greenbrier, than there were at the Wyndham. You know, it's like there was a lot of people out there with umbrellas up and, you know, they stuck it out and they got to see one of the greatest rounds ever played.
So Bryson is in between Mark Hubbard and Samuel Stevens in the Ryder Cup standings for the U.S. currently. Brooks has kind of made his qualifying a non-issue, at least to this point, by being in the top six because he won a major, which is actually really helpful to this. If Bryson knew that about getting on the Ryder Cup team, maybe he would have operated differently. Who's to say? But Craig, does this put Bryson into your list of Ryder Cup captains picks?
Yes. And only because, again, if we're going to put JT in that conversation of been there before, has done really well in this type of event, you know, is, you know, for all his quirkiness, is a guy you want on your, by your side, you know, when you're in this combative mode. I think he ticks a lot of the boxes, and I'd love to see him there more than anything else. You know, I feel like if he's playing this well, he's a weapon to have on your team. So
you were pounding the table for Jim Furyk to be on the 2016 Ryder Cup team, right?
Yes.
Because he shot 58 at the Travelers. You're absolutely furious about the way those decisions were made?
Yes. Furious is a bit of a stretch. I don't really get furious at a lot of things for golf unless it's me driving into the woods. But with that being said, yeah, I think you got to go with the hot hand to a certain degree. Like if we're saying that JT should be in the conversation with all the struggles that he's having, how do you not put Bryson in that same boat? Because he does a lot of the same things that JT does as far as been there before, has won it, like a little bit of, you know, that leadership capability. I think you got to put him in the conversation.
It's going to be interesting, right? Because you got Scheffler, Clark, Harmon, Koepka, Scheffler, Cantlay all qualified right now in points. You've got Freddie, I don't know if he slipped or not, but on his radio show said, you know, Homa, Young, Spieth are in. Fowler has to have a spot. So that leaves, you know, you've got JT, you got Keegan Bradley, you got Morikawa, Sam Burns, and I don't know if you throw DeChambeau in there for those last two picks.
Who do and you that's not even mentioning Dustin Johnson. That's not even mentioning Patrick Reed. That's not even like, that's not even mentioning Tony Finau. Like, there are a lot of guys who you can make an argument are deserving of a spot on this team. And I question if there's really an objective way to dole out these spots. I also question if you'd want an objective way to do it, right? Like, some of being the Ryder Cup captain is vibes, is it not?
Yeah, 100%. And so while we're talking about this, you mentioned DJ, right? Would you, he was awesome at the last Ryder Cup. And, you know, it's tough to say that of all these guys, he doesn't have the legacy to kind of carry him into that. But, you know, he's not even showing well in live events right now.
No.
Do you take him over Bryson or JT or Morikawa? I don't think he's even top of mind for me right now. He's just so far off the radar.
I think JT's out.
Yeah. And even would you do Morikawa over over, you know, Bryson right now? If you had to pick today and say JT, you got to pick one, JT, Morikawa, or Bryson, who would you guys take?
Morikawa.
Really?
Bradley.
Glenn, there was no other.
I'm another guy.
Yeah, I think it's very easily Colin Morikawa. The only reason we perceive Colin Morikawa as having a disappointing year is because he set such an insane standard for himself. This is a guy who finished top 10 at the Masters and top 15 at the US Open. This is a guy who has one of the steadiest golf games that we have seen of anyone on tour. This is a guy who, you know, I love my data golf rankings. They have, as a top 10 player in the world, they have Bryson down at 25. Sure, Bryson's trending in the right direction. Morikawa has been a little bit more flat, but I really think, and this happens across sports, a guy comes out and has an insane rookie year and sets a standard that he can never live up to again. And then when he doesn't play to that standard, people go, man, this is disappointing. There's nothing disappointing about the way Colin Morikawa has played golf for like the average guy we are talking about putting on this Ryder Cup team. I think it is an absolute no-brainer that you would put Colin Morikawa on the team over JT or over Bryson. I think it's absolutely insane to suggest otherwise.
You know what's interesting too? I was watching a bunch of JT this weekend, and I feel like he hasn't lost his game. He's putting himself in a bad spot with like one or two bad holes around. Now, you can get away with that at the Ryder Cup, right? Most of the time it's a team game, like you've got a partner there, or you just lose one hole.
Yep.
You get it back, whatever. It's much different than on a regular event where you're playing by yourself, you know, 4 days of, you know, you're on an island. If you really have a blow up hole, all of a sudden you find yourself, you know, eight slots back, and it's tough to kind of climb your way back in. I think his game, it's not like he's got the driving, you know, shanks. He's not like he's got the yips when it's putting or chipping. I think he's consistently not putting it all together, but you can get away with it. So I don't know. I don't think he's a bad pick either. I wouldn't know what to do this time. It's almost like you can't screw it up until you screw it up. If you pick the wrong two people or three people and they don't produce, man, you're going to leave JT and Morikawa at home and take Bryson, and he, you know, falls apart, you know, day four or whatever. And it's just, I don't know. It's a tough spot to be in, but it's a great bench. So
yeah, I just think it comes down to Morikawa, Thomas, or Bradley. You get rid of Sam Burns. I don't think he's played well this summer after a hot start. I don't think DeChambeau, as much as it was a great round last week, I think he's too polarizing as a player for the fans. So I think it comes down to those three guys for the last two spots and who's the odd man out. That's a hard decision. I wouldn't want to make that decision between those three guys. They're all great players. Well, you know, Thomas has struggled, but man, he really bounced back this year this past weekend. Almost made that chip shot on the 72nd hole to get into the playoffs, and it just bounced out. It was just
crazy.
But that sums up his season. I think he just pressed too hard at the end. I think the pressure of making the FedEx Cup, but mostly the Ryder Cup team. I think there's just weight on his mind being a PGA of America, come from a PGA of America family. I think he really wants to be on that Ryder Cup team. And I think that was the force that was affecting him. Like you said, Craig, he's not playing awful. He's just not playing up to his standards. Same with Morikawa.
And how about Ben Griffin, who ultimately was the 70th player in the FedEx Cup? His tweet yesterday, on Monday, was great. He said, "Feel awful for Justin Thomas. He's been playing great and has had some unlucky breaks recently. Taking a break or time away is healthy, and he'll come back better than ever. I also can't help but thank the flag stick on 18 for shipping me to the playoffs," which is like, this is a guy who realizes he made it by the skin of his teeth. And I think is saying what we all know about Justin Thomas, that there's a much better player there than we've seen. But also, it's hard for me to ignore players tied for 60th, Masters, cut, PGA tied for 65th, US Open, cut, Open, cut. Like, I know in my brain that Justin Thomas is a better player than he has been this season. And I know that he's had a number of tournaments in which it's been clear that he is a better player than he has been this year. But at some point, what is the, if you're looking for some assurance that a player is going to show up on a massive stage and he hasn't done that since, I mean, it's longer ago than the last British Open, like the 2022 PGA, maybe. What do you do with that? I think it's really hard.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see who steps up in the FedEx Cup playoffs, right? Because, you know,
sure.
Was that 2014? Was that when Billy Horschel won three of the four and almost swept them and was not on the Ryder Cup because the team had already been picked? He was by far the hottest player in the world, and he was sitting home for the Ryder Cup.
One of the all-time most ridiculous Ryder Cup roster situations.
That was crazy. But now, see, it's going to be interesting to see how these guys that have a shot, that are in the discussion, how they play over the next 3 weeks. Like we were saying, well, last week, it almost seems like the guys don't care about the FedEx Cup because no one prepared, no one played in the last 2 weeks. The events have been really, the fields have been really weak by PGA Tour standards. And now you're going to have good fields. But these guys, there's a lot of pressure on them because, you know, Zach's down to this pot of people. There's five guys, probably three, for those last two spots. I think everybody else is solidly on the team. So it's going to be fun to watch. You know, Thomas doesn't have a chance to impress unless he goes somewhere else. I don't know where he can go, overseas, Asian tour. Like, I don't know what DP World Tour, where can he go, you know? So we can get him into.
Wait, maybe he can go play live now that the entities have merged.
Well, what do we have any spots in Rock Rimmon? We can get. I'll play with JT. See if we get. Does that get any official world golf rankings points?
Does it count? Does it hurt him if he uses mulligans?
Do you think he's going to buy all eight?
Yeah, I mean, if he plays with mulligans, I think he's back right in the Ryder Cup conversation.
He's going to shoot 53.
I think he's had enough bad luck to have earned some mulligans at this point.
Poor guy.
Yeah. I mean, and it's going to be, this is, as far as I'm concerned, like, you can tell me the FedEx Cup matters. And obviously there was that time when Rory was asked, "Hey, is the FedEx Cup the biggest thing in golf?" And he responded, "Is the Super Bowl the biggest thing in football?" And it's like, that's, hey, you're a great steward of the PGA Tour, Rory McIlroy, but no one believes that you mean that. Yeah. So they can try to sell me on the FedEx Cup mattering all they want. And I'm sure that for that guy who wins and gets $10 or $15 million or whatever it is, and all the 50 or 75 million that gets paid out over these 3 weeks, I'm sure that's great for all those guys. I do not care, but I do care about the US trying to win a Ryder Cup in Europe for the first time in my memory. So I think the most intriguing thing about these next 3 weeks for me is who's hot, because as far as I'm concerned, that's maybe the only thing that we should care about when putting together the rest of this Ryder Cup team is just who can we depend on to be playing well a month later when they go to Rome.
Yeah, it's gonna be really interesting. And funny that no one's even mentioned Lucas Glover, who won last week, right? The field was so weak. He beat getting beat by his wife too, right? Didn't she?
Ooh. Yes. Yes, he did.
Also the recipient of a lucky bounce on 18. He snap hooked that tee shot and it hit a golf cart and came back into play where he could just lay it up and hit an easy wedge in, and he knew he only had to make bogey, made par, but
he was aiming for that. Come on.
Yeah. US Open champion, no one's even talking about him.
US Open champion, that's right. That's never forget Lucas Glover winning a US Open.
I think everybody has.
Hey.
Lucas.
Well, we won't forget Lucas Glover. Come on the pod. Craig, I was watching as Justin Thomas hit that like crazy low hook punch out of that like pine straw woodsy area. And it's very common, I would say, for me to see Justin Thomas hit a shot and for me to know intrinsically about myself that I'm incapable of pulling it off. But it got me thinking about some of the harder shots in golf for me. And I was thinking about a round I played with some friends in New Jersey a couple months ago. And one of my friends is just like a master of flop shots. I don't know where he gets it. I don't know why he can do it, but I am exceedingly jealous. Out of the rough, off tight lies, like doesn't matter. I was thinking about how hard that shot is for me to pull off. I blade them, I shank them, I, you know, knock them 30 yards past where I'm trying to be. So I want to ask you guys, for your individual games, what is the shot that you come across like kind of often that you just have no confidence in your ability to play? What is the hardest shot for you to pull off that you are faced with?
For me, it's 20 yards and in, right? Like, okay. I actually don't mind the flop shot. I actually like hitting out of bunkers. 60 yards, 50 yards, I'm pretty good with, and further back. Anything in that 40 and in range, it's funny. Like, if I'm just going out and goofing around, I'll take my putter out anywhere I possibly can just to be like, you know, if it really needs to count, I'll take my putter out. If I'm with Glenn and we're just kind of screwing around, he gets on me about, all right, this is where you got to practice it. And Kyle, who works with us, has been working on like trying to get me to almost cast back and then like follow through. So I'm getting a little bit better at it. But for me, if a good round is on the line or the match is on the line and I'm like 40 yards and in, I'm not in a good headspace. Now, if I'm in the rough, that's different. If I'm off a tight lie, I mean, like that's where I see these guys bring it back and they pop it and stop it and spin it back and whatever. I don't have any of that stuff. And mostly it's just confidence, I know too, where it's just like I get over there and I'm like, oh, this is gonna suck. And it usually does. But it's that tight lie, 40 yards and in, just kills me, absolutely kills me. So I'm working on it. I'm getting a little bit better, but it's crazy. Like a tight lie where I got to flop it, that doesn't scare me. If I got to hit something like up, like over 10 feet and I can just flop it, I don't always hit it great, but that's a lot less scary of a shot for me than, something I want to try to get it going and running a good, you know, 30 yards or hit it 30 yards in the air and stop it, whatever. That's a disaster for me usually.
Interesting. Glenn, what shot do you not want to have?
I hate to be boring and copy Craig, but I'm the same way. I'm fine. Craig hits really good flop shots. He hits them a lot. I'm fine if I'm short side and have to flop it over a bunker, but it's like 20 yards and in, like anything after that, 30 yards and out, I'm fine. My wedge game is pretty good from there, but for some reason, once I get inside 20 yards down to like a foot, if I go to the practice green, I can make the ball, you know, sit down, stand up, roll over and fetch the morning paper. And then sit there, spin it this way, that way, spin it back, run it, hook it, fade it, But then you get me on a golf course and I have a 20, you know, a 20 yard, 15 yard shot with nothing in between me and the pin but green. I'm like getting it up and down. I think I did the math this year about 20% of the time, which is totally unacceptable. But it's just, you know, that's golf though. Like, you know, I think it was Roger Maltby said golf is easy until you care. So when you're on the screen and just flipping it around, it's like, this is easy. Why can't I screw it? But then you get out, you're playing with your buddies for, you know, just for pride, not even, you know, or NASA or whatever. All of a sudden it's like something happens and it's maddening. It's like, it's round killing. It's demoralizing.
It's the funniest thing too. When you got like a 550 yard hole, right? Lace a drive, hit your second shot exactly to where you want. So you're right in front. So you've just conquered, you know, almost 90% of the hole with two really good shots. Now all you got to do is hit it, you know, another 20 yards or whatever it is in, and then you end up, you know, another five shots from there. And you're just ready to break every club in your bag. It's just, it's funny how this game gets you, right? It's like, you know, just when you think you got it figured out. Caddy was laughing at me the other day because he said, because I was driving the ball really well and I couldn't putt. Last time I played with him, I was putting lights out, didn't miss a thing, couldn't get off the tee. And he's like, man, someday you're going to, there's always, if there's four pieces of your game, right? Like it's like driving, your irons, your chipping, and your putting. For me, there's always like one and a half of those that's missing, you know, throughout 18 hole. I just putting it all together. And this is what makes these golfers so special. The fact that, you know, JT needs to hit that last shot and, you know, he almost dunks. That probably would be one of the most amazing shots in a tournament that nobody else really cared about except for him, you know, if he sinks that thing. But he just, they all have it, right? They can do anything they want at any given point. It's super impressive.
So, yeah. Glenn, when you're faced with that shot that you don't want to have, is there like a stock shot that you can rely on, or are you kind of fishing for any of those different things you're pulling out on the practice green and trying to make one work? Like, what is your response? Because for me, if I'm in a situation that demands a flop shot, honestly, I have two options. It's try it or kind of surrender, like just hit the ball at the middle of the green or accept that I'm going to, you know, run 40 feet away. Like the situation demands exactly one kind of shot. When you're in that spot where it's a little bit more free form, is there a stock shot that you're going to, or are you just whatever you try, you have no confidence in? How does that play out?
Well, I hate to say it, but I've gone to the Texas wedge if it's in the fairway. Which is demoralizing. I feel very unmanly when I do that. but like I said, when I go to the practice green, it doesn't matter what I do. Pull it through with the you know, the last two fingers on your left hand. You know what? That works. All right, now I'm just gonna fire my right shoulder. That works. I'm gonna take the handle, I'm gonna tilt it back, and then I'm gonna lift it, and then I'm gonna tilt it up. That works. Then I get up in a match or around them trying to post a score and none of them work. So not only is it demoralizing, it's also freaking expensive because I've snapped 360 degree wedges over my knee at Centennial and threw them in the lake. And then there was one time I was at Blue Hill, just across the Tappan Zee River, a bridge in New York. And I hit another bad chip and I whacked my bag and it fell down. And I picked up my bag and the driver and the three would go plop. So two $400 shafts snapped in half. So it comes with a mental and a monetary price tag. That
I wonder where we got our name and logo from.
Yeah. But there is no better feeling than snapping a wedge over your knee.
Yeah, I said that the other day too. I was like, man, they should give us an extra club in the bag every round that you can't swing with, but you're allowed to bust over your knee at any given point. Like just one.
Yep.
Anger moment, you know.
I think I wouldn't be good enough at picking my spot. Like the first time I had any urge to break it, I would break it, and then obviously the round's just getting worse from there, so I'm gonna have a bunch more times where I'm way angrier, but I've already wasted the break on that first shot that I messed up.
Yeah, you gotta wait till late in the round when it's earned the break.
Well, Glenn and I are playing in a member guest on Thursday. So a one-day member guest on Thursday. So I'll let you know how either of our yips do. Could be a great day. We could end the friendship.
The rest of my game feels good. I'm driving it well. I'm hitting my irons well. I'm putting well. It's just those little shots around the green, the simple ones that just so mindless.
Call your shot. Whose quality of play is more likely to end the friendship, Craig's or Glenn's?
Craig's, 100%.
And I'm sure that's unanimous.
Yeah. Definitely Craig's. He's got to carry the team. He's got to carry me.
You think he can do it?
Yeah, he's playing well.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Shot a 76 at Edgewood.
Mm-hmm.
Look at that.
Yeah.
You bringing that game to Rock Rimmon?
I don't know. I can't promise anything. I shot an 88 the next round. So.
But you were just getting that out of your system.
Yeah. Yep. But it felt good.
Heck yeah.
All right. I always ask you guys to call your shots for majors. I force you to pick someone who is going to win, and I hold you to it. And when you're right, I give you credit. And when you're wrong, nothing happens because it doesn't matter. It's a hard thing to do. I'm going to ask you to call your shots for the FedEx Cup playoffs as well. But I feel like it's unfair to allow you to pick Jon Rahm or Scottie Scheffler because they are so far ahead of the rest of the field. Now, let's make a few things clear. I don't understand how FedEx Cup points are distributed. I don't understand the different weighting in the playoffs. And I absolutely don't understand how they then equate the difference in FedEx Cup rank, but not FedEx Cup points to strokes in the Tour Championship and then just play a tournament. Don't understand any of it. Don't expect you to. With that said, Craig, if you had to give me two picks for guys who you think might come from outside of the top two, win the FedEx Cup based on the current standings and anything else you want to take into account, who would those guys be?
Jon Rahm and
ineligible.
I just saw this whole thing with the how many sandwiches he gets from his wife per round. He wasn't my favorite player before. He definitely is now. There were like six sandwiches in that bag.
Yeah.
The fact that he has those in his golf bag just to play throughout the day, one of the coolest things in the world.
So, did you see what he said he wanted the PGA Tour to change about their tournaments?
Yeah, he wants a Port-a-John on every hole.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, you just never know. Great response.
That was awesome.
Yeah. I'm going to break the rules. I'm going to say Jon Rahm.
Not allowed.
I don't know. I haven't even thought about the FedEx Cup yet. I've been so busy on Rock Rimmon.
See, it's not just you, though.
No,
this is exactly the point. Nobody cares.
I'll watch a lot of it because
sure, absolutely.
It does get exciting. But I still hate the way it's situated.
Yep.
I think in with these guys as well as they're playing and everything else, you play to get in and then you start everybody from scratch. Given these guys, given anybody a head start, to me, I don't like the format. We said that last year when we talked to this, and I still stand to it. I don't think any of these guys need an advantage. I think if you're playing well enough, you play to win and you walk away with it and you earn it with that. This, you're allowed to actually play crappy for a while, but because you played so well earlier in the year, you're getting a bonus for it.
Yeah, they're not real playoffs.
Yeah, and the guys that are hot, it's just, how do you catch a Jon Rahm or, you know, Scottie Scheffler with a lead, right? It could be a three-person race for no apparent reason. I just think, I don't know. I don't love the way that this thing is set up. So I'm semi-protesting it. But
so that was a really good evasive answer, but I'm going to have to ask you to make a pick.
All right, let me think about it. You guys go. I'll come back to me. I got to think through it now.
Glenn, any two players excluding Jon Rahm and Scottie Scheffler because they're too easy?
Well, Rory always plays well in the FedEx Cup. That's an easy one. But I'm going to throw two names that I think have a chance to surprise, and I think Victor Hovland and Tony Finau. I think I think Tony needs to make a statement if he wants to make the Ryder Cup team, and I think he can. He's, of course, he's got the game, and Victor Hovland, you know, just a solid player all year. So those are my two. But like Craig said, I mean, you're so far behind. I mean, you're only a stroke or two better, but I'm with you guys. Like, you got to rethink this. It should just be, if it's the playoffs, it's the playoffs. You're already down just the top 70 players. The cream's going to rise to the top. Just start everybody even, figure out something which is more interesting than this. I mean, I do like the format for East Lake where they start as someone's like 10 under, or, you know, so the leader in points has a lead. It's easier to understand than when they just played and they said, oh, due to points, this person is going to finish 15th, is going to finish 30th, you know.
Yeah, which did give us Tiger winning the tour championship, which was awesome. But aside from that, it gave us nothing ever.
Yeah, there are no, I feel like there are no surprise winners of the FedEx Cup, just based on the format.
Yeah.
Which ruins a great idea of a real playoff, right? Like, I don't know. It's like saying, you know, you get into the wild card, but hey, you're starting a touchdown behind. It just makes zero sense.
Yeah. And a lot of these guys, I mean, the Scottie Scheffler's already made almost $20 million this year. He's going to make a lot more through the playoffs. Does he care about, I mean, that $10 million annuity when it first started, I think was something for them to play for. But now it's like, half these guys are like, yeah, I've already made that.
Exactly. Give me Brian Harman and Tom Kim.
Oh, you're on my Brian Harman train.
I'm totally bought in on Brian Harman. After I heard him say that he's going to like go home and be with his family and go hunting or whatever, but not before I take a few pints out of this here cup, I was absolutely bought in. So yeah, give me Brian Harman, and you know I got to go with my boy Tom Kim. Now, it may be the case that Tom Kim is basically mathematically eliminated, even though he's 14th. I have no idea how this stuff works, but I got to pick him. I got to be loyal to Tom Kim. He's an electric factory.
And electric.
I love it.
All right, I'm going to say Ricky and Xander.
Interesting.
I think Shoffley is a good pick. I think he's another interesting one to jump up.
He seems to be the guy who's always around the hoop, right? Like, he's just – he never really plays horrible. You know, even he either is in the conversation for top five or, you know, hey, didn't have a great weekend, but he's top 15, I feel like. I feel like he doesn't really have bad showings anymore. So, yeah. I mean, we'll see.
And he did. Oh, this stuff is so weird with the scoring. He may have had the lowest actual gross score in last year's tour championship, but then it, you know, it gets weird with the scoring. He does play East Lake well, so if he gets to the end, he's got fourth last year, fifth the year before, second the year before that. He's definitely a threat there.
Yeah, I mean, as good as anybody. It's gonna be tough to beat Scheffler or Rahm at this point, but
yeah, it's gonna be hard to catch him. Weird format. I still love the
idea of the FedEx Cup, by the way. I still love the idea that there's a playoff playing for something bigger, almost treating it like it's a Super Bowl. I just don't like the format that they've got right now.
Yeah, it's not a playoff.
Yeah,
like, and there are plenty of ways you could allow your performance in the playoff events to carry over, but saying, okay, all 70 of you qualify, but if you qualify 70th, that's worse than qualifying first. That's a different, it's just a different thing.
Yeah,
well, I'd almost rather him see, you make a double bogey, you're automatically out. You make two bogeys, you're out. Make it that critical where it's like you screw up, you're out. Like, well, you really want to put some pressure on these guys, that's, you know, get creative, but you don't give anybody a head start.
That gets to one of my dad's ideas about how you would improve the game of golf. What he says is, on every hole, on every golf course, there should be a mine shaft somewhere. And maybe it's like the size of a manhole or something. And if you hit your ball into it, It's gone. You're done. Your round is over. If it's a tournament, you're eliminated. If it's just a weekend match, you're done. Walk in. That's the kind of wrinkle. It's exactly what you were saying. If you make double bogey, you're done. That's the kind of wrinkle we need. You better not hit your ball there and then see who's not going to do it.
Yeah.
No, Will, no, what we're going to do next time you're up, we're going to play shot collar golf. So everybody puts on a dog collar, right? The shot collars.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime you get a bogey, you get a shock. Anytime you get a double bogey, you get a 10-second shock, which may kill you. I don't know. I should probably look that up before. But, you know, you think about sitting over that 6-foot putt that on a normal day for a bogey, it's like, yeah, I'm going to make that. You've already been shocked 4 times throughout the day. You're not even at the turn yet. Talk about a knee knocker.
Is this why you've kept me from being like a true employee, so that when you do that, I don't have a
lawsuit against you? Yeah, I don't have workers' comp for you. So,
yeah, exactly.
It's all part of the master plan.
This was just a 2-year-long ruse to get to play me in shot collar golf.
But it's going to be some great content, I'm sure.
I admire your dedication to it. You know what? Let's do it. I think that's a great idea. I'm all for it.
We got to find a fourth that will be willing to play with us.
Yeah. Oh, I can find someone pretty easily, I'm sure. I'm plugged into the shot collar golf scene.
Yeah. Some of Will's friends probably like it.
Hey, the round's over. You can take that off.
No.
This is my Saturday collar. I'm good.
What are you doing with the trigger? Why are you running down the fairway with the trigger and your shot collar on?
It happened again. We always end up in a place like this. It's a problem.
This is that when I wasn't here last week?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yeah.
Good.
So it's not Craig, just if there was a cocktail named the Craig Schneider, what would it be?
Oh, geez. I don't know. I mean, I'd have to compete with John Daly. I hate to say it, but my go-to drink this whole summer has been the John Daly. It's by far my favorite summer drink.
Do you think you're more deserving of having it named after you?
No, not at all. I don't know what else I'd add to it. But I was in Lake George last weekend with the family, and I ordered a John Daly, and they had never heard of it. They're like, we know it in Arnold Palmer's. What's a John Daly? Like, to me, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, and it wasn't this highfalutin bar. This was a, you know, silly little restaurant in town that, you know, you would think would love this kind of stuff. And they'd never heard of it. I made them make it. It was great.
Of course. Yeah. Well, they're delicious. All right, Craig, as we start to get stuff wrapped up here, remind us. We're interested in playing in a One Club Short event. What should we be doing?
Go to oneclubshort.com, register. You can join as a member or non-member. It doesn't really matter. We'd love to see you either way. Again, not a whole lot of spots left for Rock Rimmon, but if you hop on it, you can probably grab that last foursome if you want. We did change the format. We are doing best ball of the foursome, net and gross. We tried that out at Edgewood and it was a huge hit. So we're going to kind of roll with that for a little while. Still playing your own ball, so it's not a scramble by any means. It just takes some of the pressure off if you've got two folks that just want to come play these courses but aren't absolute sticks. So it worked out really well. But we've got, if you don't make Rock Rimmon, we're going to Maryland next, September 11th at Woodholme, which is a sick course. It's going to be out of this world. I've gotten more texts and posts on that in the last couple of days than I have anything else too. So people are excited to go play Woodholme. And then we're back up north to Morris County Country Club in Jersey on October 3rd, which is a Tuesday, our first Tuesday event. So again, awesome course, one of the top rated courses in Jersey. You're going to love it. And there's nothing better than fall ball up north if you haven't done it. So come join us. We're going to have a great time this Monday and we hope to meet you all, stop by and say hi. We're all at registration, except for Will, who refuses to see us till we go to Maryland.
That's right.
And then
principled objection.
Yeah. Until he wins the FedEx Cup pick, he refuses to talk to us. But definitely come by and say hi. We'd love to meet you all. And come meet the Busted Yak boys on Monday. So come on by.
Hey, Glenn, any parting shots before we wrap this one up? I did. I just want to make sure if you saw this that you've recovered. Did you see the article in The Athletic calling Rutgers' move to the Big Ten the worst realignment move ever? And are you okay?
You mean with what their travel schedule is going to be? I didn't see this article. Is this about their...
No, this was about the original Rutgers move to the Big Ten, not the knock-on effects of Big Ten conference realignment. It was by Stu Mandel and Scott Docterman, who are both very good at writing about college football in The Athletic. It's called The Worst Realignment Move Ever. It's worse than you thought. So I would argue that their basketball team is changing that narrative. Reasonable people can disagree, but want to make sure you're okay after that one dropped.
I'm going to have to read it. I didn't read it, but you know, once they figure out a way to keep the New Jersey talent in New Jersey, that program is going to be on heading in a good direction.
I was just going to say, without Rutgers, where would Ohio State and Michigan come to, you know, stay overnight when they grab all their Jersey and New York players?
Yeah, that's a sad point. You bring all the New Jersey players to the Rutgers game.
Exactly.
Yeah. You have to dismantle them.
Craig, any comments on Michigan's number two ranking in the first coaches poll?
Yeah, it's silly. It's too early.
I agree.
But I think Michigan's going to have a great year. Someone said this is the best team they've seen in a long time for Michigan, and I find that hard to believe. They lost a lot of really good players. So I think they'll be fine. I think they have a pretty easy schedule again this year. So it's
weird.
I don't think they're really challenging themselves till the end of the year, which sucks. So, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, Colin Cowherd was very high on them.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely got some studs back, but I don't to say that they're one of the best Michigan teams that they've had in a long time. I don't know if I agree with that.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that either. All right, so as Craig mentioned, if you want to know anything about dates, courses, registration, membership, that's at oneclubshort.com. You can follow us on Instagram where we're at oneclubshort. That's where all those pictures of Woodholm and all the other great courses that we're playing are going up. You can follow us on Twitter where we're at oneclubshort. And then the number one podcast is available wherever you get your podcast with the added bonus of video on Spotify. And the complete video podcasts are also available on YouTube where we're at oneclubshortpod. That's it for this episode. We will be back similar time, similar place next week to recap the Rock Rimmon event and the first round of the FedEx Cup playoffs. Until then, thanks everyone for listening.